So here we are. This is week 5 in this session, which is session 10. So we have one more week after this, and then as you know, we're going to take a fairly long break. I think we skip 3 Sundays, and then we'll start in on the knowledge section. So I'll give a little thought to what you could be doing over those 3 weeks. But for now, we have plenty to work on, so let's get going. This chapter and the next chapter, I think, are wonderful chapters. They seem to me to be so clear about something so remarkably transformative or potentially transformative. You know, this is a place where we really are given the opportunity, it seems to me, to transform the vision. Let me see. I just want to do one more thing here, if I can figure this out. To transform ourselves, I should say, really, by transforming our vision of reality. So that's what TSK is all about. But these chapters just seem to me, you know, they lay it out so clearly. So when I started preparing for this class, I thought, well, there's very little I need to say. The chapters are all clear in themselves, you know. But then I came to the conclusion that wasn't quite the whole story. And in fact, it turns out there's a lot that I want to say. Let's go ahead and get started on the saying. I want to do the practice fairly early because I have a pretty clear sense that if we don't do it early, we'll never do it. Because there's just a lot of material to discuss. We can start right with the first sentence of the chapter, it builds on everything in dynamics, and really I hope builds on everything we've been doing. It says, space and the freedom it offers are available at the center of present experience. So the first thing, kind of taking the obvious meaning of that, and it says, at the center of present experience, just as it is. So the obvious meaning is we don't need to go anywhere else. We can engage experience exactly the way it is for us right now, and when we do, that activates the TSK vision. So at that level, I think it's clear. We don't need to go anywhere else. I do want to take just a little bit of time to talk about the significance of saying the center of experience. You have to go to the center of experience because it's really important to understand you're not sort of trying to tweak experience. That's a word people who are not English speakers may not know that word, but you're not trying to make a little adjustment out at the edge of experience. It's right at the center of experience. At the center of experience is space. And when we discover that, we discover freedom. And that's what this sentence is saying. It's also, as we've talked about this a little bit, that Rinpoche likes to kind of move in many directions, and one of the things that he's pointing to here, I think, is the center of experience in regard to the symbol for zero, right? Because at the center of zero, there's nothing at all. It's sort of interesting. You draw this shape, this circle, and by drawing it, you're pointing or you're sort of giving form to nothing. So there's something actually very powerful in the symbol zero. And again, we're going to the center of experience because there isn't anything there to be established. And of course, zero works on that level in terms of mathematics. You know, zero kind of makes the whole number system possible. And I've never read extensively about zero, but a lot is written about zero because it's this remarkably powerful symbol, but it's also nothing at all. So it works very well, even though we've, of course, talked about the notion that we can't, in terms of dynamics, the way dynamics presents it, it's not enough to stop at zero. You actually need to go to the zero-less. But that is the center of experience. And that is where we encounter, you could say, the freedom that space offers. And of course, when we're talking about freedom, we're talking about our experience, right? We are the ones who have kind of sold away our our right to be free. The actual way that Rinpoche describes this, and I'm going to the second sentence now. Slowly we're starting to generate a little dynamic here. He says, if we don't discover space, if we don't have access to space, that's because the space availability, the availability of space at the center of our experience, has been covered over. And it's interesting what he's, you know, the term he uses is it's been covered over. It's not that we've filled space up. That might be one reason we don't encounter space freedom. You know? It's not that we erase space. Although we'll see, and we've talked about this before. You could think of our way of engaging space as a way in which we don't engage space, we make it disappear. But here he's talking about covering over. It takes a special effort on our part. It's like, here is space, and we quickly, you know, in the first moment, before the first moment, we cover over the freedom that it offers. And when I read that, the image that came to my mind was the image, which I know only from movies, I guess, of setting a trap for a large animal in a jungle, right, or a forest. You dig a big hole and then you cover the hole over with branches, and so then the animal comes charging along and the branches break through, and it's caught in the trap. The image here, I mean, that may not be so helpful, but I found it a little helpful to think about that distinction, or that image. The point is that we want to build something over this hole. So we're afraid that we're going to fall into some kind of an abyss, a hole, or we're going to be trapped in this nothing at all, right? That's completely wrong from the point of view of the TSK vision. You know, but because we're committed to our own existence, our own substantiality, you know, so we are this wild animal that's charging through the forest, and what we aim to do is build a bridge, you know, build something that covers over that gap because we think that's necessary. Now, if we weren't committed to being that animal, to charging through the forest, to looking for prey, we wouldn't have to worry about it, you know. But as it is, that becomes our big concern. And so you've got to build something that's strong enough to keep from falling into the hole, falling into the abyss, falling into space, right? And so we build this structure, and the structure really, and Rinpoche touches on this in this chapter, is one way to talk about it anyway, is it's the field communique. It's what's communicated. That is what's going to keep us from falling into space, understood in this negative way. And one of the ways he talks about that is in this chapter and elsewhere too, is that we generate a kind of gravity or thinking. And we're going to talk about that later. Thinking generates a kind of gravity. That's the gravity is what allows the structure to be built that will keep us, you know, that will cover over space emptiness or space freedom. So in one way, this image of falling into the hole is just exactly wrong. But because space offers freedom, it doesn't offer the abyss, you know, it doesn't offer nothingness, it doesn't offer nihilism, it offers freedom. But from the point of view of the self, that's how we tend to understand it. So how do we cover over the availability of space and the freedom that it offers? Well, we establish the real, right? We do that. Let's look at the end of the first paragraph. Rinpoche says, if we're going to recover the presence of space or the availability of space, we have to somehow engage this world which has been created by thought, right? The operation of the thinking mind, he says at the end of that first paragraph, whose active naming and identifying structure a world in which space has disappeared. So that's the structure that we build because we're afraid that otherwise we will, you know, lose ourselves, we'll fall into this, this space. So let's try to practice with that for a little bit. And actually, to do that, I want to go back for just a moment to the previous chapter, which we read 3 weeks ago. And I want to go to page 49, the first full paragraph, because when we're talking about freedom, we're, of course, talking about the possibility that we could enjoy freedom, right? And so we're talking about the self and its concerns, you know, the self that has identified itself as this animal that doesn't want to fall into the hole, etc., etc. All of that is, it matters to us because we're committed to the identity of the self. And so when we talk about enjoying or gaining access to the freedom that space offers, we're talking about being able to engage our own identity, our own experience, and our identity as the one who is experiencing, being able to engage that in a way that leaves open the space dimension. And the chapter, what we're working with today, really goes into that possibility. But I'd like us to start with it at the beginning. So let's take a look at page 49. Here he's talking about zeroless space. Once we appreciate the availability of zeroless space, we can refer the positions that the self takes and the identities that support them, so all these structures, right, we can refer them to the fundamental dynamic of naming and interpretation. And that really is, you could say, the point that then is explored in this chapter that we read for this week, because naming and interpretation are, and constructing and pronouncing, and in many, many ways Rinpoche talks about this, all of that is due to the activity of the thinking mind, and so we want to look at the thinking mind. But the distinction that's made here that we really want to work with is, here's the self, here are the positions that the self takes, here are the meanings that it imposes. We've looked at this many times in the past. They all trace to the dynamic of naming and interpretation. And so it's possible to not go along with that dynamic, that momentum. Right? So it's still on page 49. He says, no longer bound to affirm the dimensioned out substantiality that such acts of naming proclaim, we can let the knowledge active in naming remain available in space. The result is to sustain appearance as appearance while also confirming universal knowledgeability. And then he asks, you know, is that a good thing? Does that open things up? He says, well, try it and see. So that's what we're going to do. Let's go back and look for a moment again at page 51. He's basically saying, in every moment we cover over the freedom that space offers, or we cover over the presence of space. And we do that, and that's why I'm trying to bring the passage from page 49 in, we do it by affirming the self. We don't accept the availability of zeroless space. So we would like to try, what I'd like us to do for a practice for a few minutes now, is to notice how in each moment of appearance there is a sense of the I that is experiencing, of the self that is experiencing. Right? And instead of taking that as the substantial reality, the substance of the experience, you know, if we go back and think about sacred dimensions, where it said we start with I am here, or here I am, I can't remember right now. We start with I am here. That is already the substance that we've imposed. Right? So the practice is within a moment of experience. We look at something, we have a thought, we have a sensation, so on. All the, you know, the fairly limited range of possibilities, actually, that's open to us. We look at those, and we accept their appearance, and we accept the appearance of the one who is having that experience or having that perception or engaging in that thought. We accept all of that. But we understand that simply as appearance rather than as substance. We see the activity of naming, which says, here's what's going on. Here I am, and I'm having this kind of experience. We accept all of that. But we don't accept the claim of substance. So if we go back to 49 for a moment, we don't have to affirm, he says, the dimensioned out substantiality. So there's the act of naming, and it says, this is what's going on, this is what's real, this is the way things are. We see that all of that is proclaimed, but we don't accept the claim of substance. We don't accept the claim that this is the truth that we are bound to accept. Okay? So we're bound to accept it, but we're saying, no, we're not bound to accept it. We just leave it there as the appearance of the situation. And as it said in that passage on page 49, in doing that, we gain a greater access to the knowing that's implicit in the naming. Right? We don't buy the claim that's made, but we appreciate the quality of being able to know what's going on in each moment. Okay, I think I've said more than I should have, because I'm just trying to kind of repeating myself, but I hope it's sufficiently clear. I think it is, because these are themes that we've been exploring in different ways for quite some time. So let's do it. Let's do some practice right now for about 5 minutes, okay? Okay, so let's come together, and you may like to share some of what you experience. I didn't have the chat box open, so there Ron had a kind of he brought something else into play. There's a writer who works in the Buddhist context who talks about the self trying desperately to make itself feel real. There's a feeling of groundlessness or annihilation, and yeah, that's very similar. That's very much the case here. We cover over the freedom of space because we're scared of it. So sometimes people like to say, you know, that you have to go through this feeling of terror because you're going to lose the self. I'm not so sure. I personally haven't had that experience. I think that sense of fear is kind of comes with the territory. In other words, if you understand that the self is not real, then you also understand that the fear is not real. But that's all. I'm sort of talking away. I really am interested in seeing what people made out of this practice. And of course, it's a practice. In one way, it's a very challenging practice, but a lot of times in TSK, I think, in the kinds of practices, especially that we've been exploring for quite some time, the idea is to just kind of take it lightly. See what comes up. It may not... Again, you say, oh, well, how can I possibly challenge my sense of self? Because after all, that's the most fundamental thing. But that's really buying in to the claim that it's the most fundamental thing. Totally beyond question. We are, in a sense, questioning it, not the appearance of a self having experiences, but the substantiality of that. So David writes, looking out the window, just observing the scene, without the running layer of commentary. So it's interesting, we'll get into this more when we talk about thinking in a little while. Why would there not be a running layer of commentary? Well, I suppose you might say, and David, I leave that, you know, maybe you want to say something different, but, you know, the self isn't... self isn't attached to its position, and it isn't always trying to make things right. It's a little bit like when you watch a sporting event on television, and you know, there's always this layer of commentary, right, that people are giving you to help make sense out of what's going on. But if you turn that off, if you turn off the sound on the television, let's say, then you're left with a kind of stream of events, and it may have certain kinds of significance, but you know, you're disengaging from the story that you're telling. So something like that. Okay, so just observing the scene without the running layer of commentary, just noticing the open feel of all sensing, noticing embodied awareness, movement, and contours reveal differences, shapes emerge without making sense of them. Feeling of well-being. Right. Yeah, we have this tendency, and that may lead you in that direction, to make sense. And maybe you don't have to make sense in that way. That's a term that's used a lot in the TSK book, making sense. Sounds like it's a good thing. and there is value to it. But you need to see that what you do when you're making sense is different from making substance, and we have a problem keeping those two apart. Okay. Karin writes, noticing the referring isn't so difficult, but what then? There seems to be a kind of hole. Much thinking arises. the challenge not to accept is confusing the situation. Okay, so you're pointing, and I actually meant to say to people that it's equally important when you do a practice like this, or any of our practices, to be aware of the difficulty, to be aware of why it doesn't exactly work for you. And I think you're pointing, Karin, to the confusion, right? When you try to do that, when you try to undo the naming as giving substance, then it's confusing, and in fact you find lots of thought coming up. Okay, so you would just probably want to sit with that more, or want to explore it more. It is a challenge, and it may be that there's a reaction against it. Ken says, I'm so into self-verification, so really, you know, demonstrating to myself again and again that here I am, right? I'm so into self-verification, I arise to point out, by pointing back at the self, I no longer am identified as. So I think what you're saying, Ken, is that if you try to make a move into not verifying the self, or not referring everything back to a self, to use Karin's word, then you do that by creating a self which does that, right? You point back at this self that you say, oh, that, I don't care about that self, but but then there's the self who's doing that. And sure, that's exactly what we do. It happens in every moment, right? There's thinking going on in every moment. And to move forward a little bit, or anticipate what we're going to talk about a little later, that thinking, which is it's not going to stop, that stream of thinking. There may be unusual experiences where it stops. And Rinpoche allows for that possibility and even encourages it in some of the exercises in TSK. But mostly the thinking just goes on and on and on and on. And so you could say, well, let's try to stop the thinking. Or you could say, let's just not let ourselves be convinced by what we're thinking about. Okay. Hayward says, to access the knowing present in all naming. Initially there was the thought, I am the knowing present in all naming. Then there was the awareness that there was the knowing within I am knowing. Yeah, so you're pointing to a subtle distinction, I think a very important distinction here. You can name the activity of not naming, and that won't get you anywhere. So you've got to find a way inside. And one way to do that, it's not really talked about here so much, but it just comes to mind, is if you can inhabit the whole of experience. And I suppose you could play on that in English and say the whole of experience, like this empty whole. But if you can inhabit the whole of experience, then you don't have to take a particular position which makes you the one who knows. And that inhabiting the whole is also, the I that claims to be doing the knowing is a part of the whole that you inhabit. And it seems like, Hayward, you're pointing toward that. Then Eliana had a comment prior to David's. Actually, I missed that, but she says she rewrote it. I must have missed something at the beginning. I'm sorry. Actually, I don't see anything earlier, but in any event, here is Eliana. For me to begin with I am here and open to space, it helps to drop barriers and the sensation of inside and outside the body. With a deep relaxation, the feelings and sensations come to the front and the names fade away. Well, that's good. And people, David referred to this a little bit too. The embodied self, you might say, is less committed to the identity of the self. It seems that way. If you stay on the level of names, which I have a tendency to do, then you have to kind of do this interesting little trick, to make the naming, let the naming be there without accepting what it establishes. You can do that, but it may be more direct to go to the senses and relaxation, sensation, because then the names, in a certain sense, okay, I'm going to leave it at that. Now I understand. Reading further down the chat list. Okay, Robert says, observing the outdoors without naming or commentary is always a challenge, but slowly the mind calms and accepts the presentation of space in silence. But the mind still, once in a while, pipes up. I know that it is a tree. Yes, the mind is always naming. And this is, let's wait until we go a little farther in the chapter, and then maybe I'll come back to this point. So there are kind of two ways of doing this, and we want to talk about both of them. We'll get to that very soon. Caroline writes, the permeable skin of zero. So that's a nice way of describing it, if I understand you, Caroline. It's like the skin is kind of like the circle you draw, right? You draw a circle. Where's my hand in the camera? I can't do it. There it is. Okay. You draw a circle. That line that you draw is like the skin of zero, but the zero was there before you drew the line. The circle that you draw is not the zero. It's what identifies the zero. I think that's what you're referring to. And that, if you realize that, then that you the zero that you draw is not the zero. That's letting the line or the skin become permeable, and that's very similar to what we're talking about here. This not letting the naming establish the reality of what's been named. Caroline says, it clarifies that she was bouncing off what Eliana wrote. I will accept that. The permeable skin. Okay, so I guess you're referring maybe more to the embodied self has its own permeable skin. But that is related to the zero. So I'm going to leave my comment intact. Okay, well, let's move on. So what we do in order to cover over the zero, because we are, as we've been saying, afraid of the zero, or rather afraid of the freedom of space, afraid of space. Why? Because we're committed to the self, right? So to cover it over, we name and we identify. Right? We take substance seriously. So there's a place where, on page 52, where Rinpoche talks about, he sort of identifies how thoughts work. And he says, thoughts carry and deliver experience. They give us the experience and they proclaim it as real. But he also says, before they can do that, they have to box it and label it. So he's using a very concrete simile here. Thought is like each thought delivers its content, and in order to do that, it has to box it, it has to label it, and then it can what are the other verbs? Then it can carry it and deliver it. So the boxing and the labeling, that has to do with the naming and the identifying. And so where Rinpoche goes with that, and where we want to go in the rest of our time now, is that naming and identifying, that boxing and that labeling, is a function of thought. So we've talked about thought in this program before, but not for quite a while, as I recall. But the discussion here is quite powerful. So I want to clarify a couple of things about this, because People don't have a very good idea of what thought is. They don't have a very good understanding of what thought is. I see a question here that I'll take, that I'll go to, and then we'll come back. Hayward says, instead of saying we cover over the freedom of space, might we say we are the covered over? We'd have to turn things around a little bit, but I think that movement, you could say we are the outcome or we are the tendency to always cover over the freedom of space. We are the covered over. I think that if you find that helpful, and other people may find it helpful, then good. Okay, so thinking. I was starting to say that we don't have a very good idea of what counts as a thought. So, for instance, a lot of people assume that thoughts have to be in words. And if you say, no, sometimes thoughts are in images, they say, no. No, thoughts have to be in words. Or people will talk about idle thoughts. And Rinpoche mentions that here quite a bit. He says, at the bottom of page 51, he says, as we go about our day, thoughts cycle through our minds like the background hum of a household appliance or a nervous gesture that we repeat almost unconsciously. So there's that aspect of thinking. It's this kind of just background blah, blah, blah. You know, the mind is always chattering away. Ron offers the word murmur, and I think that's fine. That's good. It's a little bit like a noise that you don't stop hearing in your house. You know, the refrigerator, as he says here, or maybe if you're next to a, or the ticking of a clock. You know, sometimes the clock will tick and it really, you hear it and it bothers you, but then it fades away. You don't hear it anymore. So thoughts are kind of, with one kind of thought, it's like that. And then there's another kind of thought that people sometimes think of when they have in mind, in which you are kind of systematically trying to think something through. You know, you have a puzzle, you have a problem, you're writing a paper. You know, it's a kind of a very structured thought like that. Those are both special cases, it seems to me. But what Rinpoche is talking about here, and it will come up more, or it will come up in a different way in the next chapter, the reading we do for next week, what he's talking about here is the kind of thinking that, as we've been saying, that names and labels, I'm going to come back because people are still kind of chewing on this idea of covering over. So Ken asks here, instead of saying we cover over the space, could we say we enjoy space? How would that change the ordinary situation? Well, geez, that seems to me exactly, that would be the opposite, as I understand it. Maybe I'm not clear on what you're suggesting here. But if we could enjoy the freedom of space instead of covering it over, I think we would have gone a long ways towards activating the TSK vision. But if I've misunderstood, let me know. Okay, so I'm going to come back to thinking and thought. And what I was saying was that the kind of thinking that Rinpoche is particularly interested in here, is a thinking that that sets everything up. You know? So at the top of page 52, he says, thoughts are the carriers or vehicles for the interpretive structures that give experience continuity. You could just as well say, I think, that they're the carriers for the field communique, right? In thinking, we affirm certain connections and identities. Right? Apart from its specific content, a thought considered as an action aims to conserve and pass on the order given by the interacting presentations of the field communique. So a thought is always communicating the truth of our situation. You know, this is the way it is. Rinpoche used to like to point out, I may have said this before at some point, but There used to be a broadcaster, a news broadcaster, I think I have said it before, but back, this is in the 1970s and 80s, a fellow named Walter Cronkite, whom most of you who are from this country will remember, he's very well known, very well trusted. He was like your favorite uncle, and you could believe what he said. So at the end of every news broadcast, he ended it by saying, and that's the way it is for, you know, Tuesday, March 2nd. That's the function. That's the kind of thinking function that Rinpoche is interested in here, right? And so he says at the end of that first paragraph on page 52, just as breath sustains the body, so thinking sustains the world that we inhabit. If we weren't thinking, we would not have a meaningful world. So thinking has this huge function to portray, to carry out, rather. It gives us our sense of what's real. It makes sense, to go back to that phrase. So even an idle thought, I said that was a special case. One way to think about idle thinking, what I mean by idle thinking is, you know, you're not paying attention to thoughts. But if somebody asks you what you were thinking, there is something you were thinking. You know, your mind just kind of runs along under its own steam. And it just keeps generating thoughts, and maybe you aren't even paying attention to them. So those are what I'm talking about as idle thoughts. But those thoughts, you might think of them as being like the little adjustments we're making all the time. We're kind of keeping things even, steady. Like when you're riding a bicycle, you're always shifting your weight just a little bit. You know? So idle thoughts are kind of like that. And then we talked a little about ordered thoughts. But the key here is that thoughts are, as he says in that paragraph, thoughts, their purpose is to conserve and pass on the order given by the field communique. So, when thoughts do that, when thoughts pass on a certain order, what they're also doing is covering over. It's that act of covering over, which has to do with naming and identifying. So you might think of it this way, that a thought is a thought has its own space, right? We inhabit the world that the thought gives us. And because we're inhabiting it, it's like we move into the thought space. And that space squeezes out the more fundamental space which would give us freedom. Right? Okay, Michael goes back. I'm just looking at a new comment in the chat box. He's commenting on Ken's thought about enjoying. He says there is so I think I understand here that, you know, the suggestion that you're making, Michael, and Ken, you were, I think, probably making the same suggestion, is that there could be a good way of covering over, which would be to sense the depth in everything. Well, I'd be inclined to say the opposite. I'd be inclined, given the way Rinpoche uses the word, to say that you can't, there is no good way to cover things over. When you cover things over, it's precisely the case that you don't sense the depth, because you only now work within the field of what you've created as you cover things over. Ileana says, talks about another aspect of covering over, and that is the aliveness of time. Yeah, I think that's a very good point, that we're talking here about the freedom of space, but there's also the aliveness of time. And we have a particular way of covering that over, which is to assign these structures of past and present and future, right? So that we let go of the dynamic of time. That's another aspect. And again, we cover it over with thought. So thinking, the job of thinking, in a way, is to cover over, is to protect us from the freedom of space, and we could also say the dynamic of time. That's right. Ken asks, don't thoughts themselves bear a space dimension? Well, yes, and I think at two different levels, that really is what I'm trying to say. One level is that thinking is just an activity. It's just one of the, you know, it's part of the dynamic of what presents itself. And if you can enjoy that dimension, to use your term, Ken, then you are not you're not committing yourself to the activity of covering over thoughts. Thoughts are trying to cover over. But if you simply accept thinking as an activity, then it's not. There's no way in which it can take you out of the space dimension, and that is what. I think that's what Rinpoche really points towards. The other aspect of space is the other aspect in which there's a thought dimension to space is the one that I was just starting to get at, which is thoughts kind of have their own simulated space. You know, it's sort of like virtual reality. It's like when you if you play a video game, you enter the space of that game, right? And when we think things through, that's a phrase we use, I haven't thought about what it actually means, but I'll use it now. When we think things through, we enter the space of the thought. And so that's a space dimension, but that's a problematic space dimension because now we've cut ourselves off from the more fundamental dimension, you could say, within which, it's a little misleading, within which thoughts arise. Okay, Michael is saying, I think there was a comment he made about the practice, but it didn't show up for technical reasons, it sounds like. So let's go to that, and then I'll see if there's some one wonderful summing up thing I can say, because we're out of time, really. He says, the grandfather clock groans before it rises to a full chiming. I assume you mean your grandfather clock in your living room or wherever it is. Like the lowering of the ocean before a wave breaking onto the beach. It helps when I feel present within the medium that joins these various manifestations to feel awareness hovering beneath the surface onto which phenomena arise. Okay, I think I understand what you're saying there. It's like... you can see the arising of the thought, or you can see the arising of the self's claim to be real, because we were looking at that in the practice. But there's a moment before that identification in which it's kind of there's a kind of a receding of what has been the case. So one of the things Rinpoche is always pointing towards again and again and again and again is that... there's a transition. You know, there's one thought, and as he says in this chapter, you know, that's like a bubble. And then there's another bubble. And we're trying to figure out what goes on between those two bubbles, but we can't because we're always in some bubble. Right? But there is a possibility. He suggests that possibility. And that has to do kind of like the, as you say, the lowering of the ocean. Okay. Ron points out that the term thinking things through is used positively in the first TSK book as a revelation of higher order space. Yeah, I was kind of dimly remembering that when I used the phrase, and so I wasn't sure whether it was a good phrase to use. One way of saying thinking things through is to say thinking through things. And that's an interesting couple of meanings there, but I won't say any more about that. Okay, so let's see what I can say that might be helpful as we move on. As I was just suggesting, talking about bubbles, we really are trapped in our thoughts. But, and I do think it's really important to make this point, and then we'll stop. That point that we are trapped in our thinking tends to lead to the idea, to the possibility, or the kind of a commitment to... let go of the thinking mind. And one way to do that, that people have mentioned today, is go back more into sensation and feeling. And that is something that TSK, that the exercises and the TSK vision suggest as a possibility at different times. But it's not the fundamental move, I don't think, or at least it's not the move that's being talked about here. We don't so much want to stop thinking. Right? Even though we're trapped in our thoughts, you could say, we're in these bubbles. But in a sense, the TSK vision says, well, that's just the way it is. We're trapped in our thinking. And even if we have a phrase have an experience where we say, you know, there's no thinking going on, well, the moment we say something, at least, then there is thinking going on. So again and again, we find ourselves trapped in thinking. But we don't have to worry about that, because we don't really have to set aside thinking. Instead, what we want to do is simply see the activity of thinking as another manifestation of space freedom. Right? If you want to see something about the criticism that Rinpoche makes of relying too strongly on experience, look at the top of page 56. We won't look at it right now because we're out of time. The move that we want to make, and this will lead to the next chapter and then I'll stop, and that is to say that, or to recognize, that thoughts really do construct a whole, which is why it's so difficult to get out of the thinking activity, and why in the end, at least, you know, the approach being discussed here, we don't want to, or we don't, there's no compulsion to try to put an end to thinking. It's to recognize the kind of global dimension of thinking. That's the direction that will lead to a kind of restoration, you might say, of the freedom that space has to offer. So let's stop there. I'm sorry I kept you a little long. These are very rich chapters, the ones we're ending this session up with. Okay. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jack.
Bye. Bye.